Pesachim Perikei Mishnah Tes 5:9. We've just finished discussing the processing of the blood of the Korban Pesach. Now, just because your blood from your Korban has made it to the Mizbeach, which is of course essential, doesn't mean you're good to go and you can take your Korban Pesach home to start roasting, even on a weekday. And the reason why is because for every Korban, every Zevach, every animal offering that's brought in the Beis HaMikdash, the emurin, certain internal organs, I'll refer to them as viscera, but it's a specific list of emurin, must be offered. They have to have haktara. The word haktara doesn't have an analog in English. It doesn't mean burning for incineration purposes, but rather burning for the sake of creating smoke, like the word ketores is incense. So there's a requirement to be maktir the emurim, to burn, to make smoke, these certain emurim, these certain viscera in every korban, meaning whether it's a cow, goat, or sheep, which is your only options when it comes to zevachim, whether it's a chatas or an asham or shlam, etc. Every one of the korbanos, every zevach, the emurim must be offered on the mizbeach. What are these emurim? So the word emurim doesn't give you a hint. It's quite ambiguous what it's referring to. The Rambam understands, since it's Aleph Mem Vav Resh, it's like the word, like Amira, to speak. It's those specific ones that Hashem listed when he spoke about bringing the Emurim. Others learn that it's referring to the king of the organs, so to speak. It's because Hashem's choice organs, or perhaps because there's a special status for organ meat. Organ meat certainly are superfoods, very healthy for you. Get your organs meat once a week. Whatever the case is, the list of what comprises the emurim is the same for all animals, essentially, and they are as follows. There are certain hard fats around the abdominal cavity, around the organs, suet, S-U-E-T in English, specific chalev that must be offered, but we'll for now just lump it all together. And in addition, the klios, which is the kidneys, both kidneys must be offered. Yoseris HaKaved, which is a portion of the liver. Some understand it refers to a diaphragm, but let's just say the portion of the liver. And then also, that's the list. That's it. The hard fats, the chalev, certain chalevim, as well as two kidneys and some of the liver, specific part of the liver. If the animal is a sheep and it has this, sheep have this like fatty tail, so the fatty tail called the alia must be offered as well as emurim. Okay, but putting the alia aside, we're talking about getting out this viscera, these internal parts, the hard fats, two kidneys, liver, and a little more than that Yoseris covered liver lobe has to be offered. So to get access to those, you obviously need to flay the animal. You need to remove the skin, get access to the abdominal cavity, and to remove those organs. So that has to be done in the Beis HaMikdash as well. You certainly can't take your Korban Pesach before you do it. So you'll have to first flay it. Now, the way animals are flayed in general, and so in the Beis HaMikdash for sure, is that you will suspend them from their hindquarters, I mean their back legs are up, and then their head and neck is down, and then you'll have to open from the feet down towards the head and get access to that abdomen. Now, there is a machlokas in the Gemara and Shabbos. If we're talking about a Shabbos activity, if one is allowed to flay the entire animal, or only sort of flay it halfway down, providing access to the abdomen, normally on Shabbos, hafshata, flaying, is an av malacha. One of the third nine malachas is mafshit, flaying an animal. The word mafshit is related to the word pshat, like as in what's pshat in the pasuk, the simple understanding of the pasuk. The reason for that connection is that when you have this sort of, like in a verse, what's flaying? Flaying is you have this three-dimensional animal, and the skin of the animal is, you know, pulled around in a complex three-dimensional way. When you flay it, you're able to pull off a hide, which is now can be laid flat on the ground in two dimensions, sort of a simplified shape. Think of like your Mercator projection on a map or something. Whatever the case is, when it comes to a multidimensional pasuk, if you want to get just the simple, straight, flat understanding of it, you'll express the pshat, the simple, smooth way of understanding the pasuk, ignoring all the contours and complexity that really are going into a multidimensional pasuk. So the same thing here too, you got to flay the animal. according to the shita, which only go halfway down, you wouldn't do more than that because that's not necessary on Shabbos, and we don't want to do more than necessary on Shabbos because it is Shabbos, of course. The other approach is the shita of the Chacham, which is it's not really mechubad, it's not dignified for the offering to be left as if it were like, you know, in some butchery, half flayed and half unflayed, and therefore it's required that one flay the entire animal properly, and that's the din. So our Mishnah will straightly assume that you're going to flay the animal totally so you can remove the skin and get access to the emurim. So the Mishnah says, Ketzad tole nu mafshitin. How do you go about doing that? Tole is to suspend. The way they did it, you'll forgive me for being graphic for a minute, but Tamid and Midos discusses this. So what they did is they had, as the Mishnah says, our Mishnah says, Unkulios shel barzel hayu kavun b'ksalim uvamudim shebehen tolen mafshitin. There were these certain unkulios, are hooks, these metal hooks, which the Mishnah, the third parak of Midos, describes, that were hanging in two places, as our Mishnah says, either on the amudim, there were these eight pillars that were situated to the north of the Mizbeach, and when they would do the processing of any animal sacrifice, so they had this Beit Mitbachayim, like the area of like of a butchery, I guess we'll call it, like a butcher shop, where they would process those animals. So there were these eight pillars. On the pillars there were these kind of three rows of hooks, unkulios, and they would suspend the animals from those hooks. It's very specific how they do it. There's a certain tendon, like kind of like our Achilles tendon, that would connect at the bottom of tendons, connect muscle to bone, so and they're tight and firm, so they would put the hook in the tendon there at the bottom of the hindquarters of the sheep or goats in this case, and it was hang upside down is also important because you want the blood comes out from the neck dripping downwards, etc. Okay, and then they would flay it from the top, which means like the hindquarters down, meaning towards the head, because the animal suspended upside down. So if there were these eight pillars on which three rows of hooks were, but because in the time of Pesach there were so many people doing korbanos simultaneously, so they needed to have recourse to extra hooks, which there were on the walls around that area. Some understand there was like sort of like a wall that sort of in the middle of the Azara, which sort of blocked off the Beit Mitbachayim, the butchering area, from the rest of the area, just like sort of to offset it because it's maybe not so whatever it is. Or it would mean like the walls like further back. Whatever the case is, the people in our Mishnah would have recourse not just to those eight pillars, but in addition, there'd be other hooks on the walls around. And that's what the Mishnah says. Let me read it one more time for you so you see it inside. Ketzad tolenu mafshitin. How do they go about suspending and flaying their korban pesachs? Unkulios shel barzel. There were these iron hooks, hayu kavun b'kasalim uva amudim, that were affixed into the walls and to those eight pillars in front of the northern side of the Mizbeach, in the Beit Mitbachayim, the butcher area. Shebehen, and on those hooks, tolin mafshitin. That's where they would suspend and flay the animals. Now, there might have been many more animals than there were hooks, even so. And therefore, v'chol mi she'ein lo makom lislos v'lahafshit. Whoever didn't have a hook onto which to hang his korban pesach and flay it there, maklos dakim chalakim hayusham. There were a makel as a stick. Like think of like a dowel. Like think of maybe like the kind of stick you would use for like a broom handle. So a makel is a stick like that. Dak means thin, like not a thick, but a thin pole. Chalak means smooth. Hayusham, they were there, available for the use. Umaniach es kasefo al katef chavero. They would like balance that pole across the shoulders of two men, one to the other. Vitole, and they would suspend the korban pesach from that pole, which is resting on their shoulders. Umafshit, and they would flay it like while they're standing up. Kind of a good trick, right? But that's how they did it. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees. Rabbi Eliezer holds that the pole itself is muktzah, and therefore he says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Arba Asar Shechalios B'Shabbos. If you're talking about an Erev Pesach that happens to be on a Shabbos, since those poles are mukta, as I'll explain in a minute, according to Rabbi Eliezer, Meniach Yado Al Katav Chavero, one guy puts his left arm on his buddy's right shoulder, V'Yad Chavero Al Katefel, and then the other buddy puts his left arm on that guy's right shoulder, V'Tole, and they would suspend the animal off of their like crossed arms that were being supported by the opposite guy's shoulder and arm. And then they would suspend it off that like that makeshift imaginary pole that their arms are making. And they would flay it right on their own arms. Meaning the guy would do the flaying with the right hand, so he'd have his left hand as like the pole, if you will, supported by his friend's shoulder and arm. Relazer holds that these sticks are muktzah. The reason why is because since they're flaying sticks, if you will, they're a kli shemalachtul iser. They're a utensil that's designated for basically a forbidden purpose for flaying. And that being the case, they don't use them on Shabbos. Now, the truth is that we just got finished saying in the previous Mishnah, the rule is ein shfus b'mikdash. All these rabbinic enactments to protect the sanctity of Shabbos, including muktzah, don't apply in the base of mikdash. And therefore, there should be no problem with using even a muktzah stick for the sake of processing the Korban Pesach. However, Rabbi Eliezer holds that's true where you need the stick, but since you have recourse to plan B, which is just using your arm, your left arm, in the way it is described, as the stick, no need to come to use the stick, and therefore just avoid using the stick altogether, according to Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara further raises the question that why the stick should be muktzah at all, because the general rule is that while it's true that a kli shemalachtu l'isser, any utensil that's used for forbidden purpose is certainly muktzah in general on Shabbos. That's only the case where you're using it for a forbidden purpose. So you can't take a hammer and start knocking in nails. The hammer is muktzah already before you even knock in the nails. In fact, according to some Rishonim, the whole purpose of muktzah is to prevent people from doing malacha inadvertently. But if you need a hammer to knock open a nut, it's totally permitted to take that hammer and use it to crack open a nut. A kli shemalachtu l'isser is mutter to be used L'tzorach gufo, if you need it for its own, for using that very utensil, for a permitted purpose. And therefore, it should be that even if it's true that the sticks have a status of kli shemalach l'iser, they should be mutter to be used on Shabbos, because you're doing it for permitted purpose of flaying the Korban Pesach, which is a necessary activity. Therefore, the Gemara asks, why should Rabbi Eliezer even hold their muktzah in the first place? You should not have the shvus issue at all. So the Gemara answers something kind of interesting. It says that originally, way back when, in the beginning of the Second Temple period by Sheni, when Ezra came back, so he found the Jews in Israel were in a rather poor state spiritually, and in many ways. They weren't keeping Shabbos properly. They had married non-Jews, etc. So Ezra cleaned things up over there and with Nehemiah, etc. And one of the things they did is they made the rules of muktzah, and quite an intense level, so that people would sort of get used to keeping Shabbos properly. And the original set of injunctions back from the beginning of Maishani's period, so kli shemalach l'iser was forbidden even the tzorach gufo, meaning hammers, or poles for that matter, were muktzah, period. In fact, the list of non-muktzah kelim was limited to essentially three items initially. In any case, while it's true that over time, and people became more Shabbos observant and sensitive, the rabbis made the list of what's muktzah shorter. They loosened the strictures of muktzah on Shabbos. Nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer is harkening back and mentioning and speaking about a time prior to that relaxing of the halachas. And therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, the stick remains muktzah. And since you have a plan B, you can't rely on the principle of Ein Shavus B'Mikdash. Chachamim will disagree and say, Ein Shavus B'Mikdash, the stick is useful, it's not muktzah at all, therefore go right ahead and use it in the base of Mikdash, even if you're talking about a time when sticks in general are muktzah and klisha malachtu l'iser is muktzah. Doesn't matter, because in the base of Mikdash it's permitted to be used, and therefore the halacha is certainly that one could use the sticks, and that would be the din halacha l'maisa.